Y'all are going to give podcast. Me in so much trouble.
Just go get the scotch now.
Who's flying through my hotel room for tonight? My wife is shaking her head. See, I got to a half million.
So popular.
I got to a half million. And I thought it was really cool. So I screenshotted it. And I was like, can you believe a half million people follow me on TikTok? And she said,
no.
She said, no. No.
It's your cute face.
There is a podcast in Iowa, Funk for Profit was named by they. They stirred up a banker near, then quick came an auctioneer. Making profit was their first goal, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Soon may the farmers come to bring us guests and beer and fun. One day when the recording's done, we'll take our mics and go. These formats shook us to our core, with Funk for Fun you will not snore. Banker set all mics to on, and the mullet of podcasts was born. Soon may the farmers come to bring us guests and beer and fun. One day when the recording's done, we'll take our mics and go. Before we knew, conversations grew, growing corn even said F you. So won't you join Tenor Dave, Corey, and crew? Please like, share, review. Soon may the farmers come to bring us guests and beer and fun. One day when the recording's done, we'll take our mics and go.
If you aren't farming for fun, you probably wear your mask in the car by yourself.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Farm for Profit Podcast. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
This is Corey Hillebo.
And this is David Whitaker.
We are about ready to start a Farm for Fun show. So for you guys just joining us, this is a laid back format, no structure. We're going to meet somebody tied to agriculture. The Farm for Profit format is a what's working in ag segment, a general topic about your farm profitability, and then a challenge. So we are on a fun show this week, guys.
Absolutely, and it is cold this week, but by the time that this episode comes out, hopefully there'll be planters rolling.
That's right. We can only hope that we can finally kick off plant 2021 in good fashion.
And I actually wore my podcast
shorts. I was going to say, and Corey's got his podcast shorts on today. So
in anticipation of the warmer weather, this comes out, we're going to be rolling, and it's going to be warm.
All right, listeners, remember to like, rate, review, and share this podcast. We've got a Gearinghoff Head of the Class listener review brought to you today by Gearinghoff. That was from our good friend, Marty Nall, 75. He says, this was a great episode. So thanks, Marty, for listening in.
The Nalls are great people. Big supporters.
And don't forget about BW Fusion. We appreciate the financial support that they've provided us. Focused on bringing innovative fertility, nutritional, and technology to the ag marketplace. They combine their best-in-class products along with the 365 soil and tissue program to provide you as the grower the tools necessary to address the limiting factors in real time for your crops.
Me and Brody are going to be out going out tomorrow morning, freezing our butt off, putting some product down.
Microbials.
Yep.
All around.
Let's do it.
All right.
Shut up and sit down.
Today on the Mullet of Ag podcast, we travel east to one of the founding 13 colonies, Virginia to be exact, where we meet up with half of the power couple that we met off of TikTok. They are a friend of agriculture, advocate for dairies, proponent of honesty when it comes to food marketing, a champion for comedy and marital advice, and it just seems to be great down-to-earth people. From the Richlands Dairy and Creamery, Mr. T.R. Jones.
Yay!
That might be the best introduction anybody's ever given me.
Welcome.
That is the point. That is 100% why we do it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
And that's the show.
I'm always waiting for somebody to say, now that we've got you, we'd like to tell you about your car's extended warranty.
Yeah, we need to work that in.
That's what I'm waiting for.
I just saw a TikTok where a guy puts a giant seashell on a beach, and it's got a two-way radio in it. So when people pick up the seashell to put it up to their ear to listen, he goes, I just wanted to reach you about
I
your car's
I swear we have the same TikTok because I just saw the same thing.
So a little background here is we were both late coming to this, as we always are, right?
But yeah.
You have a little bit better excuse. What was going on? You guys are out in the field.
We were harvesting our spring silage, and last truck got stuck. And I keep a chain on the back of the chopper to pull the trucks around when they get stuck. And while I was pulling them out, I got the chopper stuck too. So we got some tractors out to the field, and first tractor got stuck, and then we finally got enough things there to get everything pulled out. And I actually logged in at 4:05, and I was waiting. I was all by myself, and then I didn't log in again until about 5 o'clock. But.
So there should at least be some good TikTok content coming from that, right?
Oh, you know, I don't even I didn't even take my phone out to record.
Is that one of those things? It's an unwritten rule on the farm. If something's not going well, we put our phones in our pockets.
No, I mean we try to actually show when things don't go well too. It's I don't know, just more realistic of what farm life's like. You know, most of the time it's actually not going very well. Well, I don't know how it is for y'all, but for the dairy farmers, stuff's broke down more than it's running. That's just kind of the dairy life right now.
So why don't you fill our listeners in a little bit on your family history, what you guys got going on out there?
All right, so we're a dairy farm. Actually started out as a family, which you would consider like a homestead farm almost, back in the 1750s. So we're just slightly older than America is, about 25-ish years or so, and was kind of homestead. Then, you know, we have a cow, a chicken, a couple pigs, just making life work. Eventually converted to a tobacco farm in the early 1900s. Ran like that up until my grandfather took it over in 54 and converted it to a dairy. And that's what we've been doing ever since. And I think 5 years or so ago, there was kind of a writing on the wall for farms our size. We're right around 225 milking cows. That just wasn't a – doesn't really seem to be a that, – that that's a size left for people to be in dairy farming at. Kind of get big or get out. And so – we decided to take an alternative route and built a on-farm processing plant, creamery, and we're carrying our milk all the way to market. Got a little bit tired of the price that we were just being given and decided to bottle it and put our own price on it. We're actually making a profit and making ice cream. And at the same time, we started the ag tourism business, started doing pumpkin patches and corn mazes and farm tours and just trying to put people back in touch with agriculture. Educate them where the food comes from and maybe get rid of that portion of people that thinks food is grown in the back of the grocery store. So just trying to do our part to help advocate for agriculture and have a good time doing it.
That's awesome.
And eat some ice cream along the way.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like a bad, you know, side benefit to running a dairy is just the ice cream you get to sit down and eat.
It is the ice cream parlor is literally 300 yards in front of my house. Oh. It's the first week I gained 15 pounds and then I quit going every day.
As soon as my wife hears this episode, she's going to tell us we need to start our own creamery and have all the ice cream we can want. That is her favorite food.
So can we find your product on a store shelf somewhere that's not Virginia?
No, we're only inspected in the state of Virginia. You know, part of the idea was a movement back to local, instead of trucking milk, you know, across several states to get it somewhere. Just kind of service the market that we're in. And then also that's part of getting people out to the farm, getting them comfortable with where that product's coming from, meeting the cows, doing away with a lot of the misconceptions surrounding, you know, dairy farming and egg. And so our entire market is set up within about 2 hours of the farm.
Wow.
And that saves logistically, you know, it doesn't cost nearly as much to move milk within a few hours as it does, you know, a 10-hour haul up several states or so. But And the market within our given 2-hour radius is big enough for us to fill. And it's just the challenge is getting the product in front of people, having them taste it for the first time. Generally, once people have tried the ice cream or the milk, it's not hard to convert them over from, you know, the Food Lion brands or Walmart brands or whatever kind of brands. Because we got, you know, the secret magic goodness.
Yeah.
The secret magic goodness.
But that's the challenge, just growing the market and kind of getting it all the way up to where all of our milk runs to the creamery. Right now, we're at about a quarter of our milk goes through our own bottling plant, going into milk and ice cream.
Well, that's still really cool. We're going to dive more into how you started that side of your business, but what we're going to do first here is taste the first beer, thanks to Dole Distributing. And I promise, DR, that this beer is on its way to you, so you'll get to try it right along with us. I shouldn't say
sounds
that.
Good.
You'll get to try it after the fact.
Yeah.
So for right now, just fake it. And we'll be good. But we have Sweetwater Brewing Company. This first one that we have is the Highlight, the Low-Cal Easy IPA. So it is infused with hop hash and only 5 carbs.
Where are they out of? Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, Georgia. Sweetwater.
Sweetwater Brew.
This is a nice light green can, and it's got a little trout on it. Beautiful. I love some
that
trout.
Is a very light IPA. It. Dave, that's not too bad.
Yeah, I actually thought this one wasn't bad. I do get that dry taste like you were talking about last time, like wine at the end of it. But for an IPA that doesn't make you suck the back of your cheek, you know, a type deal, it's
Never sacrifice flavor for drinkability. We brewed this Sachon 4% IPA with sticky hop hash to keep the hop chop high and the calories low.
And if you eat a bunch of ice cream and gain 15 pounds, it's low calorie. It works.
What's hop hash? Does anyone know what hop hash is?
I don't know what hop hash
is. We need to educate ourselves.
There you go. All right, back to starting the creamery. Y'all started this TR in a pandemic, didn't you?
We started it. We got open right around June 2019, so we were open through the end of that year. And as a startup, it actually did very well. We were very pleased with the amount of people that we actually started the ag tourism a few years before the creamery. So we knew we had a following that wanted us to do it, and so very pleased with how they came out and supported us, and really kind of got us off to a good start. We really actually made a profit through our first 6 months, which is pretty impressive for startup businesses, you know, that are trying to break into a market.
Oh yeah.
And of course then December, January, February set in and it went backwards a little, because for some reason it's just hard to market ice cream when it's 25 degrees outside. I don't know why. I mean, I still eat it, but I guess everybody doesn't. But yeah, then things got to going around. I mean, gosh, right around early April, people just show up in droves. It's like spring break, and it's for some reason that ice cream switch clicks right back on, and people showed up in droves. And then 2 weeks later, COVID started, and Virginia was fast with closing businesses. So by the last day of April, I mean, they had us closed. And as far as people coming inside, we kind of did our research and found out that we were considered a grocery store because we had milk. And so we found out that we could be a drive-up service, and that's what we did. We became a drive-through all of a sudden, and we were a drive-through for a little over a year and 2-3 months, and finally just got rid of that last month, and it was a big sigh of relief getting rid of the drive-through. We weren't ever set up for it, and so we had people kind of driving along the outside of the building, and had a person running down with a pad taking the orders. You know, somebody had to run the orders inside, fill them, run them back out. It was kind of like a very distraught Sonic drive-in. But it was really the best we could do. And thankfully, people kind of, you know, hung with us, toughed it out. There were definitely some longer waits than we would have liked, because, you know, people get used to the Wendy's and the Hardee's drive-thrus that are 5 to 10 minutes. And it's a lot different when you're trying to use a dry erase board as your ordering menu and have a person standing there writing it down and get it all out there. And so it wasn't great. It took about twice as many employees to do it, which was also another, you know, COVID associated cost for us. And I think everybody was just really tired of it. And we finally got to do away with it last month and have people going back inside again. So that's been great.
It's good to be getting back to normal.
I was envisioning like bootlegging milk and ice cream around, like going to the back channels because everyone shut down the COVID crap. So
yeah, we got a really strange burst for like 6 weeks right after everything shut down, because I mean, a lot of things just went haywire and crazy. You know, cheese plants kind of stopped running because so much cheese goes to restaurants, so they quit taking milk. Fluid processors got behind. People started buying more milk because they were at home cooking. And all of a sudden, there was like this little milk shortage. And we actually went all the way up to about 50% of our production was going in the store for about 6 weeks. And that was great. You know, it looks really good when you're flooding a lot of milk out off the farm to the store. But it balanced itself and went back down, and now working our way back up again.
Yeah, we've even noticed that with the podcast, that every once in a while, things ebb and flow. You get really excited when times are good, and I think it helps a person realize the potential that you have, and it forces you to start thinking business wise as to what it could be going forward. So it's a really fun exercise to get that put together. Now, agritourism that you talk about, I think you're the first guest that we've had on this podcast that does that. Could you explain a little more on what you guys are doing there?
All right. So it started out when I was in college. There was I went to Virginia Tech. There was a farm 30 minutes away that did a pumpkin patch. And I went as a freshman, and it was probably, let's say, like a 3-acre pumpkin patch with a 1-acre corn maze. And you paid $5 and, you know, you got to pick a pumpkin and go through the corn maze. And it was a good time. By my senior year when I went, I think they were doing 50 acres of pumpkins. It was like a 10-acre corn maze. There were vendors lined up everywhere. You know, you could take hay rides, horse rides. They had ice cream. They were scooping ice cream. Didn't have an Owen Farm Creamery, but they were scooping ice cream there. People were out there by the thousands. And when I got home from school, dairy farming is got very tight margins, and to kind of just, I don't know, you know, we could kind of figure pumpkins really easy and see that there's actually you can make a lot more off of selling an acre of pumpkins really than you can selling an acre of almost anything, because it's a retail product at that point if the person's coming to get it. So we tried it for a year. The first year went very good, and so we kept doing it and kept growing year over year. 2019 was we actually skipped 2020 because of COVID, couldn't do on-farm tours. 2019, we had around 13,000 to 15,000 people came out in the month of October.
Wow.
It made ag tourism by itself made over 100,000 in 2019. So, you know, that's just extra money for showing people around that you don't get from selling milk. And it's something you can control, which I think is what a lot of us wanted, was it was something we could actually control. Whereas dairy farming, you milk your cows, you got your milk in the tank, you go to sell it, and you take the price you're given. And I think it was just really nice to kind of have even a small portion of something that's, hey, we plant this, we do this, it costs us X amount, we're going to sell these pumpkins for this amount, and we're actually going to make money on something we do. So that's what got us started, and it grew year after year after year. And now we do hay rides through the creamery. We do school tours spring, summer, all through the year. You can call, schedule a tour anytime. We do public tours once a month. Just, you know, as people sign up, we group them all together. We do June is dairy month. We do a couple weekends in June that are open for people to come out. You know, it's $10 and you come spend a day on the farm. Fall is the same way. It's pumpkin patch, corn maze, hay rides, all the things you want to do, $10, come spend the day. And this coming year, we're actually branching out again, and we're trying to put together a wood talk, which is essentially Woodstock reimagined with maybe not the hugeness and the craziness, but get people out to a show on the farm, and we're going to try to get our majority of our artists off of TikTok, you know, people that I think a lot of people found refuge in TikTok over the last year because they couldn't leave their house. And, you know, it was a way to almost see 60-second shows, right? You could see, you could laugh for 60 seconds. You could see a magic show for 60 seconds. You could hear a music for 60 seconds. And the idea was just to get those people out, put them on a stage, and let people come out and see them. So that's the latest in ag tourism in Richlands. And it seems to be our business that's always growing the fastest.
That wood talk seems pretty freaking cool. Tanner, can we fly out there?
can we afford to fly out there?
We gotta line up some more sponsors.
But okay, so let's dive into what TikTok has done for you. Do you remember how or when you got started on TikTok?
I downloaded it. I actually downloaded it right after it came out. And I watched it for about 2 months. And I think it came out in like 2019, maybe 2018, late 2018, early 2019. I watched it for 2 months and I deleted it. I said, this is a
what?
Trap. You turn it on, you get stuck, you're watching videos. And I would watch videos for like 45 minutes, an hour at a time at night. And then I'd realize it's like 11:30 and I was like, oh man, I gotta get rid of this. So I deleted it. And, a couple years went by, and a lot of people had asked us to start a YouTube channel. And so I went around and I kind of interviewed everybody on the farm, like 60-second interview, put them together, had a 5-minute video, went to upload it, and it said it was going to take 18 days to upload from our internet connection out here in the boonies. And so I thought maybe YouTube's not for me. My wife had actually downloaded TikTok for the first time at that point, had been watching, having a good time, and I don't know if she mentioned it to me or I thought, well, you know, I could do TikTok. I could do 60-second segments, and that's uploaded from the phone. you know, that could be a good time. So sometime around, I think sometime in like July, I posted my first TikTok video and it got like 8 views. And I thought, oh, well, that's it for me then. And so I quit posting. And a couple months went by, and sometime in November, for whatever reason, I was watching TikTok and something had just gotten under my skin. So I made this post, and I don't even remember what it's about. Made a post and it got, you know, like 500 views. And I thought, well, that's kind of cool. That makes it fun. And so then kind of kept doing it. And then for some reason, I don't know, I still don't know to this day, people started following me. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. You know, let's see how many people can follow you. And so, you know, one day I got 50, the next day I got like 150, and it's going up. And then I found out if you get 1,000, you can go live. And I thought, well, it's be cool to show people around the farm, do some tours. So after about 2 weeks, I had 1,000 followers. My wife was kicking my butt. She had like 20,000. You had 32,000? She had 32,000. Oh, she now. Was doing
is
the farm page.
Is she sitting there?
Oh, yeah. She's right here.
Well, we
she's
can't
hanging out.
We can't let her sit in the background. She's going to have to be a part of this, too.
Oh, well, come on in.
I'm completely fine.
Well, you guys can hear. Scooch over. Scooch over in here.
We got to get the power. We got to get the power couple together on the show.
Yeah, they introduced us as the power couple.
Oh, did we?
So, I don't know. Kept going. And then, you know, I keep telling people, I think TikTok's a lot like playing the lottery. You make a post. You try to pair it with putting a good song to it or whatever. You put the right hashtag. You throw it out into the world. And sometimes they just hit. And I think I might have started in mid-October. I was coming up November. I had like 50,000 followers from posting a couple times a day. And then I had one that just hit. And overnight, all of a sudden, I had 300,000 followers. And wow. Then it took off. And from there, I got invited out to go on this cop car ride-along with a group of guys. And I thought, what a great chance to go. You know, they had millions of followers. And I thought, well, man, why don't I go take us some ice cream and maybe, you know, maybe they'll make a little video with the ice cream and it could be good. You know, people see it on TikTok and maybe it'd be good for, you know, getting people out to the creamery and kind of get the name out there, you know, because that's part of the challenge. And had a great time. And that's spun off, become its own thing. We actually go around doing shows now. I actually leave tomorrow to go to South Carolina doing comedy shows. And we got one in South Carolina tomorrow and one in Georgia the next night.
And that all came from TikTok?
All from TikTok. So now in my free time, I go around and do comedy shows. We're still farming. We got Wood Talk coming. And just kept going. And now I looked this afternoon got on with y'all because people usually want to know. I'm up to 866,000 people follow me on TikTok now.
Wow.
And 6 months, 6 months or so. My wife is shaking her head. I got to a half million.
So popular.
I got to a half million. And I thought it was really cool. So I screenshotted it. And I was like, can you believe a half million people follow me on TikTok? And she said,
no.
She said, no. No. She turns around. We have somebody else in trouble. She said, I do have no idea why half a million people follow him.
It's your cute face.
So that's where it is. I mean,
it's funny that she
blows my mind.
Yeah, it's funny that she brings that up. Because I'm not even going to announce the number of followers that I have after hearing those large numbers.
No.
But isn't so good? Because he picks on me. He does. He picks on me. I have 144.4.
I'm proud of her.
And that's a lot.
Would you have 800,000?
No. I think if you add Corey, David, and myself together, we don't have 144. No. But my wife will even give me a hard time. She's surprised the number of people that follow me. She goes, why do they want to see you? Why are they wanting to watch what you're doing? It's a really fun environment. But one thing I want to get back to is your ride-along crew. This is a super cool... The whole reason... So we found you on TikTok, obviously. And if I can urge our listeners to do anything, it's to go find you and to sift through the videos that you've put out there, because you guys do a great job of telling the story, but also, like you said, advocating. You're connecting a lot of different audiences, and this connection to the PD is super cool. How did that start?
So part of when I actually started, like I realized people were going to start following me on TikTok, that it could become a thing. It's really easy to get in the algorithm. You get put into like segments. So it would have been very easy for me to fall into what everybody calls farm talk. And I would meet a lot, and I have. I meet a lot of great farmers. I meet a lot of great people, and I've become friends with a lot of farmers through TikTok. But the other thing I wanted to do is farmers know what farm life is like, right? I wanted to cross the border into people that have no idea what farming is. And so when you were introduced to me, you said marriage content, ride along, you know, I'm all over the place as far as the hashtags and where I'm reaching. But the idea was to reach people that aren't normally involved with agriculture. And so it's, to an extent, I think it's been working very well, because people go into Brittany's lives where she's doing tours on the farm, and she'll get 600-700 people in there that just have never seen a farm before. So that was the part of the barrier we were trying to get through. It's great to show farm people a farm, but it's really great to show non-farm people a farm. So getting mixed in with the, going back to your original question, getting mixed in with the ride-along crew and the cops, right now, or when it started, we had three cops, somebody who was retired from corporate business, a concrete pour, dairy farmer, a potato farmer, and a landscaper. So we put together this hodgepodge group of people, and really we did exactly what y'all were doing. We went out to Officer Kingery's house, and we sat in his garage and drank beer and just goofed around, made videos, and had a good time.
Yeah.
And something really strange happened. People loved it. I mean, we hashtagged it Ride Along, because people knew it was coming along. And I think by the end of the weekend, the Ride Along hashtag had some like 30 million views, or maybe, I don't know. Wow. It was some odd number of million views, and people just really seemed to like it. We had a good time. I think Officer Udi, when we sat down in the truck, picked him up from the airport, I think he said it pretty well. We got in the truck. It was me, Georgia landscaper, Jimmy Jones, and Officer Udi. First time we've met within 5 minutes. And he turned around, looked at us. He said, in about 5 minutes, we're going to hate each other. We're going to love each other. It's going to go one of two ways. and luckily, it went the way where we all just kind of really loved each other. The thing of the TikTok algorithm is it really pairs you into groups of people that you just have a lot in common with. So we had a great weekend. People really enjoyed it. So we decided to get together again. That went just as well. We got together a third time. And at that point, so many people were asking us to go around and do shows that we thought, why not? And so we got in touch with basically a talent agent, booking agency, and she was more than happy to book us. And so that's what we're doing now. We're going around selling shows, and you know, it's a far cry from dairy farming, but it's fun to get out, make people laugh, make people smile, have a good time. I think, and it's just especially a good time to be doing it. You know, people are finally starting to go out again, right, kind of shake COVID off, want to laugh, want to get out. Yeah, I mean, it.
Have a beer.
It's, do you have any entertainment background? Like, you just go out and do what, a 30-minute bit?
The way I got my wife, obviously, she's smarter than I am. She's prettier than I am. She's pretty much better at everything than I am. The only thing I had going for me was that I was a little bit funny. So I guess.
Funny looking.
I have a feeling she writes all your jokes.
She does. She 100% does.
This is
no, I have no entertainment background at all. Not zero.
Well, I just looked at your TikTok, and all the ones with your wife in it seem to have more views on those ones than the ones without. So
it's the loaves.
Because people like my videos. Sassitude, apparently.
Sassitude. That's a word that I had written down, sassitude.
I was scrolling through the day, and she said it was something about buns, and she said I had loaves.
Oh, my goodness. That happened,
yeah. Chickens. People love that she just buys chickens like what the...
Yeah.
Impulse buys chickens like it's her job.
So this
every
is...
time she goes to southern states this time of year, we get six more chickens.
It's fine.
So we have a store called Tyson's where that can happen. That's where we would go and buy our chicks. So chicks and ducks. But this is one of the coolest podcasts that we have ever recorded. Not only because it's a husband and a wife, but they literally right now, if I can describe this, are sitting on their front porch and just enjoying themselves, enjoying the conversation. So that's really cool. We don't get to do this very often.
This is actually my grandmother's front porch.
Oh,
so
really?
So this is the original farmhouse.
Oh, my.
Yeah. She's inside taking a nap, I think. Yeah. All right, go run away with the beer.
She probably deserves it. But, yes, so we're going to jump into the next one. We're actually recording this on 4/20. And if I'm reading this can
today, isn't it?
If I'm reading this can correctly, it says the 420 strain. So this is the...
Smell this before you drink it.
I did. It's
G13 IPA by Sweetwater Brewing Company. Established 420 strain. Give it a taste.
This smells danky.
Do you guys like IPAs?
Ooh. Absolutely. No, not really. They're too bitter for me.
Well, you're going to, yeah, rush to that box when it shows up because it looks like they sent us three IPAs today.
Yeah, this
these guys are
all... Well, y'all said the first one. If it's very light on the, what is the IBU thing that measures hoppiness? IBUs? If it's light on the IBUs, I can get down with it. But some of those heavy ones, they just, I don't get it.
This can says, we took an already dank IPA and married its hops with a strain of specific... Oh, I can't even read that.
Terpenes,
a natural hemp type flavor. This resulted in an aromatic, super hybrid, sticky IPA that is ready to rip.
This is for the weed smoker.
This is for the weed smoker. Okay.
I think I got some CBD oil.
Yeah, it must. And it smells like it. That's why. Yeah, man, this is so good.
So the other thing that we have coming up as we taste, we do have a premium hard seltzer. So I think I saw what you got in your hands there, Brittany.
No laws when you're drinking claws.
It's too early for scotch.
Oh, shoot.
Oh,
dang.
I like you.
She normally just does two fingers of scotch. So
I like Aaron Rodgers. What is your does the same thing?
What's your favorite kind of scotch?
I like the Macallan.
Yep. I got a brother-in-law that's really got us started on drinking scotch. So it's really fun when we get together with the in-laws to everybody brings a new bottle to try, and kind of like your ride along. So that becomes quite dangerous when you find a good one. You know, I know we're kind of bouncing around today, but I don't want to lose the opportunity that we have. So, Brittany, did you tell TR what I asked you to respond back in an email? Does he have any idea that this is coming yet?
I don't think so. Unless he's been going through my emails.
So this is the first time we've had a power couple on our show. Normally we have individual guests. So what we did is we sent Brittany some questions that she could answer in which she thinks you're going to predict. So we're going to ask TR the questions that are on this sheet here, which Brittany's already answered. To
this
see
is like
just
the newlywed, newlyweds game on
y'all are
going to
give
podcast.
Me so much trouble.
Just go get the scotch now.
Who's sponsoring my hotel room for
tonight? All right. So the first question we ask is, what is your biggest fear? What is TR's biggest fear?
My biggest fear is snakes. She said snakes.
She did. Not so serious. Yeah. He's afraid of snakes, but seriously, losing me.
Or the kids.
Or the kids. That's so far down the spectrum, I won't even pull it into thinking about because it'll mess me up for days. Appreciate that from all of you. Now I'm just going to go
I'm
drink
with,
three beers. And
I'm
go
with you
three.
On the snakes. I can't stand snakes.
All right, let's go to the next one.
Yeah, no.
What makes you the most happy?
The most happy? Playing with the kids or spending time with Brittany. I've never been a material person. I just like spending time with the people I love.
Gee whiz, he's two for two.
I mean half.
All right.
I mean, and getting a good stand of corn.
Did you write that, a good stand of corn? I do like a good stand of corn. I go along and sing to them after they start coming up. She probably told y'all that.
All right, TR, when we asked, who is your hero?
My hero? My dad.
Yeah.
Winner, winner.
Man, this is
she's nailing it.
Is there one that we could hit him on?
All right, I'm gonna jump down. If you had to eat one meal or dinner for the rest of your life, what would you eat?
My mom's beef tenderloin.
Wow,
nailed it!
They really
mashed potatoes.
Yes. Virginia.
You got corn on the cob?
I want some type of green.
You guys need
green beans or lima beans. Grandma's rolls.
I didn't write wrong. I didn't go that into detail.
Didn't get the whole meal, but yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Would you rather be rich or famous?
Oh, man. Is neither an option?
Nope.
No?
No?
She had
Can
a,
you answer? Would she had a, be rich or famous?
Well, I mean, I figured they wanted to answer, so I didn't put neither. So I picked which one I thought that you might prefer.
She had a great answer, too. No pressure.
Yeah.
I don't know that I really want to be either.
Well, you're already famous.
But it's
just one.
On a tangent, it's a good kind of famous because, like, I'm just famous enough that when I go out, like, every once in a while, somebody recognizes me, but not enough that a lot of people recognize me. So while it's, like, kind of fun, it's also not overwhelming.
So is that your answer? Or
yeah, but I don't want to be more famous. I would probably rather be rich and totally unknown.
So the answer she gave was rich, but he's probably going to say, I'm already rich in relationships, but more money would be nice.
There you go.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
Here's one to stump you. What is your favorite color?
My favorite color?
Yeah.
You answer what my favorite color was?
Yeah.
I like maroon and orange. I'm a Hokie through and through.
So let's expand on the orange. Yeah, let's expand on the orange. What kind of orange?
Burnt orange. It's burnt orange.
Burnt sienna?
Burnt sienna.
Oh, that is like specific.
Burnt sienna orange? You got that specific?
That's your favorite color. Look, I did pretty good.
That's so specific. I would have been happy with orange.
So here's a fun part is there is a burnt sienna t-shirt in that box that has the beer for you.
All right.
Here's the problem. Okay. Here's the problem, though. The only size I had left in that color was large. So you're going to have to make it into
it.
I think you should put it on wear it as a belly shirt.
I was just going to say, it's going to have to be a crop top.
Crop tops all around.
Crop tops are coming back for guys.
Crop tops are coming back. TikTok leggings and
it'll be good. It'll be good content.
Yeah. Somebody sent me a full Sully costume in the mail the other day from Monsters, Inc. But it's two sizes too small.
Oh, no.
But they took the time to send it, so I feel like I got to make a video with it, right? But
just cut the...
As soon as I get time, I'm going to squeeze into it.
Yeah, cut the feet off so you know, your shins are still showing. And yeah, that's a good one. Let's do three more of these, and then we can move on. Who would you love to meet one day?
Love to meet. Alive or dead, or does it matter?
Oh, that's a... Yeah, she picked a really good answer.
That's for you to determine.
It's all of the above.
I would like to sit down with Mike Rowe.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, he's done a lot of things. It's just a really, I mean, maybe, I don't know. Of course, you don't know people. Just seems to be a down to earth, you know, kind of guy.
I think that's a really, really good answer.
You said top three. She's laughing because she probably doesn't think that's her answer. What were your other two?
Who else would I like to meet?
Don't be so literal.
And did you put alive people or dead people?
I'm not telling you. You got to guess.
Well, I want to know how you took the question so I know how to answer it. Did you take it as it had to be alive?
I took it under all spectrum.
Under all spectrum. Robin Williams.
Oh, ooh, another
good one.
That was
going to be my second. That's not who I put.
I'd love to meet Robin Williams. Uh-huh. And I'd like to meet
do
top
some,
person
do some
you think
soul,
I would like to meet.
Do some soul searching. dig deep.
Yeah, I know it.
Dig deep.
Jesus.
Yeah. Touchdown.
Hallelujah.
He is risen. There's a song like that. If I could have a beer with Jesus.
I want to go back to the Mike Rowe one because I think that actually, like, if you and Mike Rowe in one room by yourself, two microphones, like, can you imagine the quality? Like, your deep voice. His deep voice. I think you guys both have great voice. That'd be awesome.
And I agree. He's one of those folks that I look up to as far as content creators and his ability to reach outside of spectrums like what you guys are doing. That would be a lot of fun just to have the two of you having conversations about experiences and visionary. I think that would be a great conversation.
I mean, if he was on TikTok, I would try to get a hold of him, but he's not on TikTok.
Oh, we have reached out ourselves. We do a conference every year, except for the pandemic year. And I've reached out twice to try and get him to come here to Central Iowa and talk at our conference. He is a very well-respected man, in my opinion.
Yep.
All right, I'm ready for the next one.
Last one. What is your least favorite daily task?
Least favorite daily task? Waking up.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
You guys really? She just won the game there.
That is a power couple.
It's a good thing y'all did it this way, because if she'd had to guess my answers, I'm pretty sure it'd have gone pretty far south. Or if I'd had to guess what she was going to say.
Oh, my goodness.
That was good.
So while I get ready to open up another beer here to chat, I had seen one of your TikToks. You kind of got off to a rough start with some storm damage on your farm. Can you tell a little bit of that story of how things kind of started off a couple years back?
So we... The day after we bottled our first jug of milk, we had it was 150 by 130 clear span fabric roof barn. It's where we house the majority of our herd. It's great, big old pack barn. We loved it. Cows loved it. It was by far the nicest building we had. And the day after we bottled our first jug of milk, 5 minute thunderstorm came through, and it caught a wind, and it plucked it anchor bolts right out the concrete, moved that barn over about 50 feet, and dropped it
right on top of 113
cows. Right on top of cows. Luckily, none of the cows were injured.
Yeah. So when we were actually on our first date in months when we got a call from my father-in-law saying that the barn was down, and we were so shocked. I asked him if he was serious, and he was like, yes, when are you getting home? And so, of course, we rushed home immediately, and when I got there, I did have to cut one cow out of the support cables, but other than that, all the cows were fine, except one had a laceration from her brisket to her elbow, but she's since made a full recovery.
Wow. You said a five-minute storm.
5 minutes.
Yep. So a straight line wind, I think is what they called it. It ripped all the tops of the trees off. They said it was about 30 foot or so off the ground, but it caught the barn and took the barn down.
Sounds like a derecho.
I was just going to say, I don't know if you guys saw it in the news, but we suffered a derecho last August.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we saw it. It was like an inland hurricane or something. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. So I've still got family trying to rebuild grain bins and customers trying to rebuild buildings, so I feel for you. But there was another unique turn to the TikTok that I saw in you haven't been able to rebuild that building yet, correct?
No, so... I mean, it was actually a long case going along with it because it was a cost share program where, you know, taxpayer dollars, you can sign up for programs through USDA office or Farm Service, wherever. And the idea is to fence cows outstream. So we participated.
They're called best management practices.
Yeah, back in 2010, we participated, fence cows out the water, put the barn up. You know, we had to put in like 75% of the money. The program put in like 25%. But as an agency, the USDA and Soil and Water Conservation are responsible for making sure those practices are installed correctly because they give you the list of people that are pre-approved to be engineers, to be contractors, all those things. And so that's how we went about it, had it constructed. They came out and checked it, said everything was good. When the barn blew down, they sent somebody out and said, we need to do a case study basically on what happened because it's, you know, they can try to prevent things like that in the future. If something was done incorrectly, a lot of times they'll pay 100% to put the structure back up. All these things sounded really great. And so we went through the process, found out that there were a lot of things done wrong, mostly in the foundation work. I don't even remember what the steps were anymore. Basically, had to file a complaint. The state representative looked at it and said, we're not going to pay for this. Then filed an appeal, had an outside judge look at it, and he basically came back and said, I can't overrule the state conservationist, but I can say that things were done inaccurately and that this should be reviewed by the USDA at a federal level, you know, and that some compensation should come into play. And then it took, the whole process took a little over a year. Couldn't afford a lawyer. I mean, a lawyer, we kind of looked at getting somebody to take the case for us. And I mean, best case we found was like $200 an hour, $300 an hour. So I actually sat down and learned a whole lot of building law. I learned all kinds of building code law for Virginia. I must have read 5,000 pages of.
He's so multifaceted.
I must have read 5,000 pages of.
That's true farmer fashion.
Yeah.
Building code. For the USDA, just all the channels. And I mean, I picked it apart. I found everything they had done wrong, presented it. Judge agreed. I filed my appeal to the federal review. They reviewed it and said, we're not going to pay for it because if we paid for yours, we'd have to pay for other people's where the same thing happened.
Jeez.
Thanks, guys.
Jeez.
Thanks for being responsible.
Did they know you could crush them on TikTok with 800,000 followers or what?
Yeah.
I mean, I can, but at the end of the day, it's...
Yeah, no, right. I'm with you.
No, I'm
against the USDA, you know? I mean, what can I actually do?
Yeah.
So, I tell you what's a little bit of oddity. I'm not a political person at all as far as who's in office. From my perspective, there's not just... I don't think that government accurately represents it's people anymore. It's the way I see politics. I think there's mm-hmm. a lot of flaws all the way through the system now, and I think it's happened over time. But I don't know that. I think a lot of times there's great intentions that just turn into bad problems.
Yeah,
and that's just my personal feeling. But as a bit of an oddity, I was supposed to hear back in 30 days from filing that last appeal. That was while the Trump administration was in office. I didn't hear back for 6 months, and every time I called, they said it's being reviewed. It's a very complicated review. We're pulling in all kinds of outside resources. We're just really looking deep at this thing. And I mean, a week after the administration change, I heard back and the thing got canned, and I never even got it. I got a one-page explanation.
Wow. All that work to get one page back.
Man, that's...
Yeah. All came down to one sentence that basically said, we're not gonna allocate any funds to this because of what I just told you. If we take responsibility for this situation, we have to take responsibility in every situation, which is kind of the point of having an inspection and a review process. But like I said,
yeah,
what do you do? You hire the lawyer for $500 and go chase the USDA with their, you know, their bottomless well of lawyers and money.
Right.
My complaint as a farmer here is they have their hands so far into everything in the process of building that or in these programs that it should have been caught in the first place.
That's right.
Uh-oh.
Is the audio still going?
Test. There we got you back.
Oh,
there you are.
Oh. Okay. Maybe y'all dropped me right before I said something I shouldn't have.
Well, maybe that was
the government censored you.
Well, I was just asking you, did you guys have insurance on the barn and personal insurance? Did that go anywhere?
So we did to an extent. So it's just because farming's tight and margins are tough. And this is really something kind of needs to change with insurance. So when you have your house and your car, you insure your house and your car, right?
Yep.
When you have a farm, you actually have to insure building by building and a piece of equipment by piece of equipment. And you can actually, as a dairy farmer, because you have to own so many things, you can actually have a higher insurance payment than you can have income. So you have to go through and pick and choose what's essential, what's most likely to go wrong here, what piece of equipment can't you live without, what can you afford to replace. So like milking parlor, that is 100% insured, because if we lose our milking parlor, that's a huge problem.
Right.
Now, housing facilities, they're kind of broken down to, well, let's insure them for the loss of the roof, because most likely thing that's going to happen is the roof's going to blow off, but the infrastructure, the concrete, the fans, the headlocks, all that will still be there. So in this particular case, it's a steel building on concrete. The company that put us up, and maybe why you shouldn't listen to things, had a 10-year warranty of any failures. It was 10-year warranty. It actually failed 9 years and 11 months in. Should have been under warranty, but the company that put it up was out of business for the last 8 years.
Oh, boy.
Warranties were not picked up by the next company. So that was all part of another problem. So we weren't running a lot of insurance on the building because it was a warranted building.
Right.
We were running $50,000 for they put it up and they said, if anything's going to happen to this building, you're going to lose the fabric roof because it's the weakest part of the building. So we put insurance on to cover the fabric roof. Yep. When the warranty ran out, who knows what we would have done, but it's all irrelevant. Company went out. Warranties were no longer honored. Just the perfect mess.
That was the observation that I had, and I appreciate you relaying the story to us, because I know it was painful for you to tell again, but that's what I wanted our listeners to get a retrospect of, is just what you had, the snowball effect of one thing after the other, and then how you've continued to persevere through this to get to where you are right now.
So I just want to recap. Y'all had me dredge up the peg barn falling down, asked me what happened if my wife and kids were gone. we gotta drink more beer on this show.
I thought this was COVID.
I thought this was farm for fun.
This is. But then, you know, conversation rolls, right?
Remember, you've got that belly shirt coming.
There we go.
I can't wait for the TikTok.
Brittany, those are pretty fancy fingernails there if you're...
You know, it makes me feel good about myself, so I keep them done.
That a girl. So let's go into this double dry hopped IPA. So this is the third IPA that's headed your guys' way. And then we will close out the episode
smells fruity.
With the fruity. Jeez. We'll close out with the seltzer. So we're going to start here with the double dry hopped. Again, this is thank you to Dole Distributing, Sweetwater Brewing Company out of Georgia. So give the double dry hopped hazy IPA.
It smells fruity, but it's not fruity.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I'm waiting for David to spit it out.
So bad, guys. If you don't like IPAs, just stay away from that one.
So yeah, Dave's been known to give us some really good facial reactions to this process. But thank you, Dole, for hooking us up with this. That was the straight up juice bomb with a double dry hop.
I didn't get any juice bomb out of that. No. I did get I double smelled dry the juice. Hop.
I smelled it. I got one more.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the owner of this beer company is a late 20s millennial. these flavors are definitely geared to a younger crowd.
Probably has a beard like you, too.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
You mean his homeless beard?
Yeah,
his homeless beard.
I'm doing good just to shower every day right now.
That's good. I wish I could grow a beard like that. I got one more question on the regulation side and the government side before we go into some more fun topics. So you guys are like, what, a couple hours from Chesapeake Bay?
We are. We're 2 hours away.
Yeah. So do you guys have any repercussions or, you know, regulations that are not typical to other places in the United States because of that? Because I've always heard that's a hot topic in ag.
Hey, we are the 2019 grand winner for the Chesapeake Bay watershed area for keeping the water clean.
Yep.
Really?
So there is a big push to clean up. It's to clean up the bay, Chesapeake Bay, the blue crabs, you know, they're trying to grow the populations back. We've also got that snake fish came over from
somewhere.
It's an Asian type fish. Okay. That's kind of taken over the canal. It's eaten a lot of the native species. So they're doing a lot of things to try to kind of restore the bay. And that's 10 years ago, it was a volunteer practice to sign up for these things. And you got, you know, government assistance. And every year it looks like they're closer and closer to making them mandatory. So last year I actually got invited by Farm Bureau to go to Richmond, sat there all day while we were waiting to, they basically wanted us to stand up and say, we would like for you not to vote through whatever, I can't remember what number bill it was. And it was where they were going to make it within the next 2 years, mandatory to fence cows out of streams. And we sat there.
Which is a good practice.
It's a good practice. Yeah. We sat there for, I think it was about 8 to 10 hours. And it was over probably 3/4 of the room was there specifically for that. And for whatever reason, they decided to leave that to the very last item. And this guy got up to speak. You know, for everything that happens, they open up the floor. Would anybody like to come up and speak? And people will come up and speak for a couple minutes. The whole time we're sitting there, eventually they get to this thing about the James River out of Richmond. The septic system in Richmond is critically far behind in infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so they started talking about these events. They have them called brownouts. And so when it rains in Richmond, the septic system can't handle all the water. So they open up like 18 sluice gates straight into the James River. And all the septic runs straight into the river.
They call them brownouts. There's a website that you can go to see the level of brown.
And it sounds like one of these beers. Billions of gallons of raw sewage a year. And so that goes on. They have that conversation and they vote and they say, well, taxpayer dollars, this is a big project. Let's table it and see within the next 5 years if we can come up with a plan to fix this. So that's the decision on the billions of gallons of raw sewage into the James. And so then they finally get around to the farmer portion. They said, all right, so annually cattle are producing like 70,000 gallons of sewage that's going into the Chesapeake Bay. And at that point, the 70 farmers they've had sitting there waiting to hear are like, are we for real? We just heard the guy stand up and say there's 2 billion gallons of sewage coming out of Richmond, but we're going to make it mandatory for the farms and the 70,000 gallons of you know, animal waste. And this farmer, I mean, he had been sitting there, a beef farmer from somewhere out in the valley. He got up. And they said, we're only going to give you all 30 seconds each because it's too many of you. You can't all talk, say what you want to say. And he gave them 3 minutes of straight hell. I mean, he tore everybody a new one. He got done. He dropped the mic on the floor. And he said, I've heard all I need to hear. He walked out. And I mean, I have trouble not laughing at funny things.
Yeah.
And the room was dead silent except for me in the corner going laughing internally as hard as I could. But anyways, they did actually vote, like, I think it was 11 people on the panel. I think 7-4 not to pass it. So, I mean, it's definitely serious, though, to answer your question. Yeah. I mean, it's looked at. I think agriculture in Virginia, you're going to have to start thinking about getting your cows out of streams.
If they're not already. I mean, a lot of people have done it already.
And don't get me wrong. Like she said, it's a great practice. It's something that should be happening, cleaning up water sources and restoring the bays.
Absolutely.
But let's also take a look at the big problems. You know, let's take a look at the real big problems.
We also need to be doing everything we can to improve public perception of agriculture. But again, we do need to look at the larger contributors.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, like, it's kind of like the hunting thing. Like, you know, hunters are probably some of the most champions or the biggest champions of environment and habitat. And we are the biggest champions of farm ground because we want it to go on for generations and generations. We spend money on these fertilizers and this feed and inputs. Like, we don't want to lose it, right?
That's so, right.
I will just say that the Chesapeake Bay thing has been toted probably 2010 since I started picking up on it. In row crop, they sling that word around up here and say, well, you don't want a Chesapeake Bay situation up here, you know, on all our watersheds and stuff. So, I mean, it's like the fear of God up here. So,
yeah, I mean, 2010, just talking, I think I'd take it that you're a grain farmer of some nature.
Corn, soybeans, and hogs.
You know, from the hog aspect of it, as far as waste management, managing, you know, your inputs and your outputs.
Yep.
But really, I think the thing Chesapeake Bay has probably pushed the most in Virginia, 10, 12 years ago, I think there was probably about 70% conventional tillage versus, you know, no-till. Mm-hmm. And I bet now it's 95% of people in Virginia no-till now. It's just...
Wow.
Because of that push, you know, don't erode the soil, don't lose runoff, don't do anything, you know.
Yeah,
we got programs for restoring low wet areas, you know, and just everything.
Yeah,
everything.
Okay.
Well, we had to pick another enlightening topic. Or I shouldn't say.
While we were talking about government and regulations and unfun things, I just wanted to piggyback that on. It was one of the things I had written down.
That's pretty good. What?
We're not bitter, we swear.
No, we're just giving you a hard time. I don't know if y'all know this, but I hang out with people that do nothing but give each other a hard time.
Absolutely.
And we also want to be respectful of your time, because I know you need to get back out there and start mowing hay.
But this is the most fun thing I'm going to do today.
By the time we're done, he's going to be intoxicated.
I'm going to have some Swervy Windrose.
That's the goal. We'll be the same way.
Just make a TikTok about it.
So that's what I want to get back to is your TikTok, because I always, you know, I follow people for a reason. And then whenever we put a show together, I always like trying to figure out what makes a person tick. Go ahead.
Just opened a beer with a piece of bark.
Oh,
she is a keeper. And that's where I was going.
Wow.
Is the TikToks that get so many views for you guys is when you're giving marriage advice.
Yeah.
So clearly it's fine.
Or when it's time for him to sleep on the sofa.
but I think it's really cool. The three things that I really picked out of that is you spend your time motivating others, giving good advice, and then just flat out helping people realize that they are okay or that there's things that they can do to get better.
So there's so many things going on in farm culture and marriage and, you know, Brittany and I have been married. We'll be married 8 years this fall. And we feel like we have a good, strong marriage.
I knew the questions, at least.
Yeah. Of course, we, like anybody, we fight. We have arguments. You know, we don't always agree. And I think as far as the marriage stuff, there's this Hollywood perception now that if you're not happy, then your marriage is broken. But that's not true. Your marriage goes through up and downs, just like your life goes through up and downs. And you either choose to be in it and work on it, or you walk away from it. And just my opinion is there's too many people that just, at the first sign of trouble, are walking out of them now.
Right.
Now, there's situations where you do need to walk out of, you know, if it is
toxic situation.
Just toxic for both people or, you dangerous. Know, there's abuse, there are great reasons to leave.
Yeah.
But a divorce rate that's over 60% now.
Is it that high?
It was over 58 kind of into last year. I would imagine it's still going up, but I mean, it's absurd. You know, it's just, I just don't think we respect the sanctity of it anymore. Maybe we jump into it. Maybe we don't really understand what we're getting into, but there's also a stigma that surrounds talking about anything that's negative. So if you're out with your friends and is three other guys sitting here talking, if you're out with your other guys, friends, drinking beer, are you comfortable actually bringing up a problem in your household? Hey, my wife and I are struggling with this.
We're supposed to keep that.
What did she say?
She said we're supposed to keep that between us, but that doesn't mean I shouldn't be able to seek advice. If we don't learn from each other, if I can't sit down with you and say, hey, my wife and I are struggling. We had our first child and, you know, she's not getting much sleep. I want to help more. And I know you've got a four-year-old and we can't have that conversation. I can't tell you I'm struggling. And you can't tell me how you got through it. We're not helping each other out. You know what I mean? But there's a stigma around sitting down and saying, hey, I'm struggling in my marriage.
Right.
Oh, we're talking about feelings.
Or, yeah, and your mental health.
Yeah, that's where the farm side comes into it. Just because I'm aware because of the farms around us, our neighbors, luckily nobody completely personal. The suicide rate in dairy farmers is astronomical. It's so the average American citizen is at 0.01%. That's suicide rate for your average Joe. Your veterans, they're up at 0.03%. That's 30 times more likely to commit suicide than an average Joe?
Right.
Your dairy farmers are rocking at 0.3% right now. That's 10 times more likely than your military veterans. It's 30 times more likely than your average Joe. And it's...
So we need to be able to talk about your feelings.
You got to be able to talk to people. But it's... You go back to the farmer mindset. If I can take it, I can make it. You know, if I can survive this, I can get through it. But don't ever show any sign of weakness. And I mean, I was brought up in the same culture. My grandfather, when I was like 7 or 8, I remember him slicing the back of his leg open on a disc blade. He just, you know, slipped. And I mean, it cut easily an 8-inch slice down to the muscle in the back of his leg. He literally went inside, had my grandmother pour iodine on it. They wrapped an ace bandage around that bad boy. And that was it. And that's the culture we grew up in.
Right.
I don't think I've ever seen my father cry, except for when they were burying his father. That is the only time I've ever seen my dad cry. I've never heard him talk about how he's feeling about anything.
Right.
Now, he'll tell us he's proud of us. He'll tell us he loves us, which is a stretch a lot of times for farmers. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that I've ever heard him sit down and say, I'm stressed out, or I'm sad, or I'm upset with the way this went. You know, it doesn't come out. And that's, it's the same across the board. It trickles into any kind of farming because margins are so tight.
Yeah.
And I mean, we all know, because we're in the farm community, we all know somebody that has committed suicide in the last year or two. I mean, hopefully you don't, but I know I do. And it's everywhere I go, somebody knows somebody that has. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that for me, the same as wanting to jump across, get out of just farm talk and get to people that don't know anything about farming. I just wanted to jump out of the norm where you don't talk about the things that bother you. And so I just started talking about the things that bothered me. That bothered me as a married person, that bothered me as a farmer, that bothered me every once in a while as an American citizen, but I stay away from those pretty hefty because it gets political really fast. And,
yeah, those escalate very quickly.
To some extent, normalize difficult conversation. And I think, you know, we all know that growth comes from failure and difficulty. So why don't we talk about it more and actually learn from other people? So maybe we can avoid it, or we can get help, or we can help somebody else and do it without looking down on that person, do it without making them feel bad about it or being made to feel bad about it. And so
reach out, talk about your feelings, ask people if they're okay. It's okay not to be okay.
That's right. Have a beer. Talk about it.
Yeah,
that's right. It doesn't have to be a pressure situation. And that's what we've learned about TikTok and Twitter, where a majority of our listeners come from, is it can be somebody states away. But still, just chat about it. Let it go.
Yeah.
Help find some support. But we are we are like 10 for 10 on topics that are downers.
Yeah. On this show. Yeah, we are.
But we're
still having a good time.
I blame it on TR.
We're still having a good time.
How warm is it there right now?
It's like 65. When we first started this and y'all were talking about we're ready to start plant 2021, we've been planting corn for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, I've been sitting here.
We're rolling.
So I started off this episode kind of in the mindset that I hated that bird that was in the background because I could hear it. But I've grown to love it because I can't wait until we can hear the birds chirping. I can be sitting on my deck without being covered with a blanket and by next to a fire.
Yep.
Really, really looking forward to that. But let us try our seltzer. And then I want to close out talking about something on a positive note, which I'm hoping to be baby chicks and mini cows.
Yeah.
Good
luck.
All right.
We got the Oasis. Need to talk about any bread.
So we have the Oasis series. We're actually going to try two of these really quick. Oh. These are hard seltzers. One of them is a strawberry kiwi, and the other is a mango passion fruit. So I think your left hand, Corey, should be the strawberry kiwi.
So how do you feel about seltzers as a whole? You know, these are fairly new in the last year or two here.
So for me, I don't intentionally buy them, but I really enjoy them when someone gives it to me. I have become a bourbon or a scotch guy, so I enjoy that. And then depending upon what the temperature is outside, if I throw it on the rocks or not, I don't mind the seltzer. But again, it's not something that I'm out there buying. Corey,
in the summer, I'm not buying it. I mean, my wife likes to drink them, so it's a good change of pace. But ain't no laws when you're drinking the claws, right? High alcohol percentage, low calories. If you're on a diet, works good for that, right?
So the second flavor we have is a mango passion fruit, and I think that's my biggest thing, TR, on these seltzers, is the combos of flavors. Why can't we just have strawberry, blueberry, whatever it is? We gotta mix everything
all marketing
together.
Right.
These are smooth. These remind me of like a bubbly water.
Yeah. It's like a flavored water.
Yeah, they would be dangerous. So watch out, Brittany, when these get to you.
Like these need to be mixed with vodka.
Put a little tequila.
Pack more punch.
Yep. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, TR.
So I'm going to tell you this story because one night my sister bought Hardywood, which is a brewery local to us in Richmond. They take their beer and they age it in bourbon barrels.
Ooh.
And it's good. I mean, it's really good. It's smooth. It's got a nice oaky finish. It's fantastic. We never had it before. She brings this bottle over. She's told us all about it. She pours me a glass. I drink it. It's great. I pour another one. I drink it. It's great. The whole time I'm sitting at the kitchen table. And everything's fine. And I had like three of these in like 20 minutes. Probably had it'd be almost like four cans of beer because it came in great big bottles.
Yep.
And so I stood up and the whole room just went, womp. And I was like, oh my God. I said, oh my God, something is wrong. And she was like, wow, they're just beer. She was like, you lightweight, it's three beers. She stood up, fell down. I went over and grabbed the Hardywood bottle. They're 14.5%.
Nice.
And we just plowed through them because it was like we were drinking beer. And I mean, rocked our world. You got to be careful now when you pick a drink up because, you know, in the microbrew age, 5% and 3.5, the three two flu, those don't exist anymore. You start picking some of these things up, they're around 15% alcohol. They'll knock you on your butt.
So I'd say one of the beers that we have tried that will stay in the Hall of Fame is the Tyrant of Darkness. Mm-hmm. And that is one of those to where you drink it as a dessert beer. And it comes in a bigger bottle, like you're saying, but you want to split that three ways because if you end up drinking the whole bottle, when you stand back up from the table after you finished eating, you got a great start to your night.
Yeah, it's like drinking three bottles of wine.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
It is. But that is some of the best and most flavorful beer.
What was the name of it?
Tyrant of Darkness. It's out of Glenwood, Iowa.
I guarantee you won't find it.
I'm going to try. If I get a hold of a bottle, I'll send it down your way.
I got one down at the farm still.
Maybe we'll throw a second box. Well, first of all, I want to confirm the first box gets there.
So we have been known to have problems getting mail at our house.
Well, we'll figure that out. If you end up getting this one, let me know. Confirm. Right. And then we'll see if we can't get a bottle of Tyrant of Darkness down there, because it sounds like you guys would enjoy that one. But let's end on a high note here, and then we can let you get out to the hayfields. But what made me laugh the hardest is when the baby chicks came into play, and then again, it just kind of rolled into almost like a petting zoo type format. So what's the story behind that?
Yeah, Brittany, what's the story behind that?
They're just so cute.
Oh my God.
Impulse control is something I struggle with.
She comes to me one day and says, "Hey, I want to get a couple chicks for the kids, and you know, have chickens in the backyard." Yeah. And they'll collect the eggs, and we can have eggs at the house for breakfast. And, you know, it sounds like a good idea. Can you build me a chicken coop? I said, sure. Pick out the coop you want. We'll build it. It'll be great.
Yeah.
She finds this chicken coop. It'll house like four chickens. Said, you know, is four chickens enough? It'll be great. This is fine. Four chickens sounds like plenty of chickens for one family. You know, that's four eggs a day. Build the little coop. Take it to the house. Set it down in the yard. Okay, it's time to go get the chickens. She says, I'm going to take the kids. We're going to Southern States. We're going to get the chickens. And I'm like, great. I got work to do. You know, I hope y'all have a good time. I can't wait to see it when they get back. She comes back.
I don't know what you're talking about.
With like 30 sticks. Like 30. And I was like, what happened? We were going to get
the kids were four. So excited.
Did you buy all of them?
I bought a lot of them.
Southern States does it to you, though. They pull you in. It's there's a bag of feed sitting there, and it's like, buy this $15 bag of feed, get 12 chicks for free. But then they also run a special on the feed bags where if, like, you buy four bags of feed, you get the fifth one for free.
Lies.
So it just makes sense to buy five bags of feed because you know you're going to need it. And then you get the 12 chickens with each bag. It's 60 chickens they send you out there with.
It's fine.
So she comes home. She's like, I've got 30 chicks. Here, we're going to put them in this water trough in the house for...
Well, they have to stay inside.
3 weeks. Yeah. Keep them warm. And now I need you to come up with a chicken coop for our 30 chickens.
Oh, geez.
And I was like, why?
You're a very good engineer. You can figure things out.
Luckily, we have this old shanty building out kind of behind our house. She goes, cleans it out. We kind of fix it up a little bit.
Look, I'm playing into you.
Order her this little laying bin. Put it all up. While that's happening, my mom's like, hey, I'm going to go to Tractor Supply and get some more chickens. She goes, oh, now our coop's big enough. We could have 60. It gets 30 more chickens.
That is not
five?
How that happens.
And so we started out.
Exactly. She went and got five more bags of feed.
Yeah. We started out with four. And within 3 months, had 60 chickens in that building. She did me dirty this spring and said, I'm going to get some chicks for the, we had an Easter egg hunt.
This is true.
I'm going to go.
This next story is all true.
She said, I'm going to get some chicks for the Easter egg hunt, but don't worry about it. I want to keep six. It's just a variety we don't have. I'm like, whatever. Who cares if you got 50 or 56 chickens, right? And so I'm going to get these. I'm going to give all the rest of them away. As soon as we get in Southern States, turkeys. They have turkeys.
I have always wanted a turkey.
Immediately buys two turkeys, walks around, sees the duck
fan. I mean, the kids have always wanted a turkey.
Walks around, sees the duck bin, buys six ducks, goes around to the chicken bin, buys 12 chickens. Okay, it's for the petting zoo. They're going to leave. Yes, they're going to leave.
It's so nice. You're so easygoing.
Within a week's time, we bought six more ducks, another turkey, and like 22 more chickens. And so the spring thing comes along. It's great. We have a good time.
People were supposed to take them home.
When we get done,
in my defense.
When we get done, I come over and I said, did you give away all the chickens and the ducks? She looks me in the face and says, oh, I forgot to put the sign up. So we literally have all 30 chickens.
I really did forget.
All 12 ducks.
It wasn't
and
some,
three turkeys now.
Some devious plan. I did forget. But now they're all at our house.
That sounds.
But anyways,
awesome.
I'm gonna get a Cluck Norris.
Cluck Norris
is coming to live at my house.
So somebody saw those TikTok videos and was like, "Oh, you should see this chicken." They sent a video of a Brahma chicken. It's like 3 feet tall.
Huge, right?
Huge.
Yeah. I can't wait.
They walk
so
out
now
of
they're
a.
Sending, they're gonna bring us a Brahma.
Oh my god.
Brittany wants a mini cow.
Yeah, I want a mini. Well, I saw this video of mini cows and it was really cute. And so I recorded this video of TR of me asking, because I thought 100% TR would say, no, we have, you know, 500 cows. What do you need a mini cow for? But then he upped the ante when he was like, sure, I'll buy you a mini cow. Just give us another baby.
Have another baby. Somehow she's gotten all the ducks, chickens, and turkeys she wanted, but we haven't had another kid yet.
cows are easier than kids. That's what you said, right?
If you could see their, if you could see their faces,
I said it's easier to make a human than it is to make a cow. Yeah.
Listeners, if you could see their faces right now, I don't know if I have words to describe what's on Brittany's face.
She's in hog heaven over there with all of her animals.
Yeah, they're the most adorable.
So we've got a neighborhood pond, and every year we raise ducks as a neighborhood, and that's what happens is they come home, then they go into that cattle trough in somebody's garage that ends up just completely ruining the smell of their garage because it's
it's terrible. Ducks are
the nastiest animals on earth.
It is amazing what comes out of a small duck.
Yeah, it's nasty.
But they grow so fast.
But then we end up,
they grow so fast.
Neighbors end up banding them, and then it's fun. I shouldn't say it's fun, but that's what I'm going to use. It's fun to get phone calls from people that shoot it or find it or whatever it is when they can, you know, it's what you're supposed to do. If you find a duck with a band on it, you're supposed to call. And it's kind of neat to find out where they've been. I don't know if we've had one from Virginia, but they definitely have come, you know, migrated south and found out what where they went to.
Duck season.
Yep.
It's a good time.
They
taste good.
Absolutely.
There is part of the ag tourism. We have to, or we don't have to, but every fall we set up a little pet zoo for people to come out. But part of the goal is to actually build a reasonable size petting zoo and have the mini cow and a couple turkeys and some chickens and ducks.
Some ducks and
so,
so
apparently
I'm just starting
just,
the petting zoo a little bit early at our house.
Backyard.
And it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine.
To not keep you guys from what you have going on for the rest of your day, your afternoon, and your evening, we like to ask as we close out every one of our episodes, each one of our podcast guests, what do you think the most common trait is of the most successful farmers you know? So you
most common trait of successful
farmers. Versatility.
I don't know if I know
that was fast.
Right
on the hip. That was fast, Brittany.
Yep.
And we have not had that answer yet. So I appreciate that. But I think I think you are spot on. Versatility. It comes down to I hate plugging. I'm not going to plug it. I'm not going to plug the name of the company. But there's a radio commercial that we have in our area that states how a farmer has to be a meteorologist, has to be an agronomist, has to know finance and accounting, has to know all the. I agree. The most successful farmers have to be versatile. Wouldn't you say, Corey?
Jack of all trades.
Jack, you said that. TR said that earlier.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
We're calling
mostly a jack of all trades.
We're coming full circle. So thank you, Brittany, for that.
No problem.
This is a good answer. I was going to start out by saying I don't know that I hardly know any farmers that aren't successful anymore because it's such a the margins are so narrow and so few people left that everybody that's still left is just really fantastic at what they do. But just to echo what Brittany's saying, I'd say it's versatility and adaptability. If you're not adapting to what is it doesn't necessarily I don't mean latest greatest equipment or barns or facilities, but if you aren't keeping up with the trends of your market, if you're not finding ways to market yourself, if you are not finding ways to get direct with your customers, if you're not finding ways to value add your products or be gigantic, I just don't know that there's much place left for you in agriculture.
Yeah,
and that's good. I agree with Brittany. I think it's versatility and adaptability.
That's good.
I would agree from our observations. I think you guys nailed it.
I got a few rapid fires.
Fire away.
So be short, both of you, if you want, or one or the other.
All right. You answer first. I'll answer
so your love story, where did you meet? Give me a couple sentences.
I'm going to let you do that.
I was actually back at college visiting a friend for a weekend, and he had a social to go to. And at the time I was 24, he had lined me up a date who was a 17-year-old freshman. I said, not a chance, and you know, not going to happen. He said, do you know anybody still in Blacksburg? And I said, yeah, I do. And so I messaged Brittany. She responded by saying that
do you have the right number?
I didn't have the right number, promptly telling me that she already had a date scheduled.
I did have a date.
And telling me to go kick rocks.
I did not say that.
And then she messaged me back 10 minutes later and said, okay, I cleared my schedule. We can hang out.
You know, I thought he was
only,
cute.
It only so took 10 minutes.
Yeah.
All right, that's not rapid fire.
And I didn't even have to call back again.
I was in a master's program. So
and then happily ever after. Okay, what breed of cows you got?
We have a mix. I like to have a little color. So we have black and white Holsteins, red and white Holsteins, Jerseys, Swedish Red, and currently one brown Swiss.
So what is Red? That's another one I didn't hit on. So you've made Red famous. What is she?
She's a red and white Holstein.
Red's made TR famous.
Yeah,
that's a good point. I like Brittany.
It's a substitute.
Are you sure she shouldn't be the one going on tour?
She should. She definitely should. So there's actually a petition to get her up on stage. No, to
not gonna happen.
Someone's got to keep everything going back home.
Yep.
The petition is from us. It's not even from the people coming to the shows. We're all like, Brittany, why don't you get on the stage with us, have a good time? She's like, no, just do what y'all do your thing.
All right, next one. It looks like you guys like to give back. 1 out of every 10 gallons of milk goes to a good cause. Tell us a little bit about that.
So just as part of life philosophy, family philosophy, wanting to be good stewards of not only the environment, but in our community, helping people, you know, that are having a hard time, we decided when the creamery was opened that for every 10 gallons we bottled, we were going to donate 1 gallon to a local food shelter. So that's what we do. Last year, we donated a little over 9,000 gallons of milk. And this past year from TikTok, a couple people that follow us started a milk donation drive. And we've, I think, so far donated over 800 gallons of milk. Wow. From people that have just purchased a gallon of milk.
For donation.
That's pretty good philosophy.
So giving milk back both ways.
And that's total gallons. So that's across all sizes that we sell. So, and just so total when, gallons.
Even when people purchase those gallons for donations, so we've purchased 800, that also means that we've turned around and donated 80 on the back end because it's still gallons sold. So that's 880 gallons that have gone for donations. Nice. So.
That is so cool.
Yeah. It's like 10% tithe, right?
Yeah.
That's right. That's exactly where the idea came from.
Yep. All right. Dairy Outlook. What's it look like? I know it's been pretty grim, but are we looking
still,
up?
It still looks that way.
So expanding on that. So does that's why you got into the agritourism and doing the creamery and all that. Like, so
yeah,
is that
so? Dairy, we just like every dairy farmer, we get the 3-month forecast and the kind of year trend. You get them every quarter with your, you know, your milk check newsletter or whatever. The next 3 months is expected to just kind of hover or go down, and then the long-term trend is still just to not really gain any traction in any markets anywhere. It's just there's still so many unknowns as
trade and
really, if somebody were to answer the question honestly, they would just tell you they don't know.
Yeah,
because as COVID's over and restaurants come back, how many are going to come back? What's that demand for milk and cheese going to be? Is it going to go up? Are people still going to cook at home now that they can go back out? It's just COVID's been a variable that nobody could anticipate. Nobody really can predict it. It's just, it's bad. I mean, I do know from locally, you know, we've lost 50% of the restaurants around us and they're not going to come back. So it's, I think it's really just a long-term recovery to see what actually comes back now.
Gotcha.
I hope you have one more question.
I have one
because
more.
I ended on a high note.
I have one more. Okay, let's plug Woodstock and let's plug your tour, your comedy tour going around. Give us some dates. Give us the dates of Woodstock, where you can find tickets and all that kind of stuff.
All right. So the links for all the shows that have tickets are in my TikTok bio. If you have an interest in following me, I'm TR_Jones7. It's just the name that was available.
You can follow me for your wholesome cow content.
You can follow Rich Lance Dairy. She's the better looking, smarter one anyways.
Was I supposed to laugh at that?
Today is Tuesday, Wednesday. We got a show Thursday in Columbia, South Carolina, which I think you can still get tickets to if you want to. We got one in Georgia. I'm going to get the wrong part of Georgia. It's in Georgia on Friday. I think there's barely any tickets left for that. Fort Wayne, Indiana on the 14th of May is sold out. Wow. And then we just released dates for June, going to be in Texas and North Carolina. And so those ticket links will go up pretty soon in the next few days as we confirm the locations and dates and get the ticket button set up. And then Woodtalk is Labor Day weekend, September 2nd through the 6th. People can come in. It's just a all weekend festival. It's going to be a good time.
Leave your worries at the door.
Yeah, leave your worries at the door. Drop COVID. Come out. Have a good time. Drink beer. Listen to music. Watch shows. Watch comedy. Watch. If you got to act, you can perform, and you're interested in performing. There's a website, wudtok.com.
Or if you'd like to volunteer. Or sponsor.
Be a vendor.
Oh yeah.
It's still a lot left to pull together. We did get to kind of announce our first 10 performers. We're looking to have around 60 performers.
Wow.
So we did get to announce our first 10 this week, and we should keep announcing them over the – we're hoping to kind of have them all filled out and booked within the next 2 to 3 weeks here, so people know what they're coming to see. 90% of them will just be TikTok performers,
right?
People that you know, we want to see have a chance. Been entertaining people for a year from behind a screen.
You can camp on the farm or bring your RV.
Yeah.
Or you could stay somewhere in town.
Also, on a side note, not that I'm condoning it or prohibiting it, I think they're supposed to legalize marijuana in Virginia by like July. Oh. So we're going original Woodstock here.
Oh, on 420 recording.
Yeah. I had no idea.
Big announcement.
You didn't know? Oh, yeah. No, somebody messaged me and was like, did you know this is probably going to get passed? Do you have anybody to be a dispensary at the event? And I was like,
wow.
Me? I'm going to be.
There you go. That sounds like a good business opportunity.
Yeah.
So, but honestly, thank you guys. You stayed way longer than we had expected. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. I also really appreciate the amount of time and effort you put into your TikTok accounts to reach beyond agriculture. Obviously, we're farm for profit. Our audience is very, very focused. But I think for all of our listeners, I can speak on their behalf to say thank you for spreading the message, shedding the positive light that you have, and having the tough conversations that you do. It's something that I think is going to go a long ways.
Yeah, I love the content. I know I could speak for Dave. He wanted to thank you, too. He had to leave for his kid's birthday tonight. But
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
No, well, thank you guys for having us on. It's been a blast. And I mean, you yourselves are advocating for agriculture. You're putting the show out on the air.
Thanks for giving farmers another voice.
Yeah, farmers need all the voices they can get now just to try to put people back in touch. And it's great seeing everybody that's doing it. And I'm not trying to toot my horn here, but I've been lucky enough to do several podcasts now over the last few months. And it's just really great to have people interested in putting stories about ag out there. And it feels good. Instead of being told not to tell your story and hide so that you don't become a target for an activist group, to get out and talk to people and actually tell that story.
Yeah, and I can't say thank you enough for what you've done. You've been our first power couple. You've also been our first dairy. We have had and tasted cheese from a local dairy.
Oh, yeah.
But as far as guests go, you've been our first. So thank you again so much for spending time with us. And you've been the first one that's recorded on a front porch of a heritage farm. This has been an awesome environment. I really appreciate the conversation that we had.
That's amazing, too. How many generations? Like, what, 270 years? How many generations?
So, we only know that because I have an uncle that is just, he loves genealogy and ancestry, and he has traced it back. And really, the last time I saw him, he actually thought it might even be older than that. But the problem was he ran into the paper trail ended, and so now he's having to dig. You know, I don't even know what you do after the paper trail ends, but he kind of has some leads for some reason. You know, if you get talking enough to the right people, people can dole up information from back who knows when. They can tell you when your ancestor came over on the Mayflower, you found the right person. And so that's his thing. He's really interested in it. But as far as I actually know personally, back, my grandfather's grandfather was Napoleon Bonaparte Jones. And so we're at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 generations deep now.
Holy cow.
No way.
This has got to be
Napoleon Bonaparte Jones.
I think you'll have the longest heritage of anybody we've probably talked to and will talk
to. And probably will ever. Yeah, there's no way we're going to exceed that.
You guys pushed the Indians off.
We were lucky enough to go up into Vermont a couple of years ago, purchase some cows. And it may not have been as old as this farm necessarily, but the parlor they were milking in, the barn they were milking in, the farm was almost 200 years old. Oh, yeah. Hand-hewn. And I mean, I would have loved to build a house inside of it. You know, just turn it into a house. I mean, just, you can't find that kind of beauty anywhere else. But it's some old farms over here on the East Coast. Of course, everything got settled from east to west. But
right.
We need to do an East Coast tour.
It's some of those things left, and they're gems. They're diamonds in the rough.
Yep.
That is so awesome. But, yes, thank you guys so very much for being a part of this. Brittany, for joining TR. We greatly appreciate it.
We'll let you go. I'm going to tell y'all a joke before we go.
You are not allowed to tell the vegetable joke.
I'm not telling the vegetable
joke. Now you have to tell the vegetable joke.
So our daughter, she has this prize calf that she actually took down and showed last week. And while some of the ride-along guys were up here, they were chooking around the farm looking at setting up woodtock. And so they came across this hole. And Paul wanted to know how deep the hole was, so he picked up a rock and he threw it in the hole. And Kevin, they listened over in there, couldn't hear anything. So they picked up a turtle, and they chunked the turtle down the hole and listened in, couldn't hear anything. And then Kevin saw a railroad tie sitting there, so he grabbed it and he threw it in the hole. And they're staring down the hole, and all of a sudden this calf comes running by and jumps down the hole, just gone. And they were a little puzzled. But Brittany came walking along. She said, have y'all seen Hazel's prize calf? And Paul looked at Kevin. He said, well, we threw a turtle in a hole, and we threw a railroad tie in a hole. But a cow came running by and jumped down the hole. But it was definitely strange. Brittany said, well, there's no way that it was Hazel's calf. It was tied to a railroad tie. That's the railroad tie.
I appreciate
you guys having us on the show. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was
Thank
fun.
You.
That was. Thank you. Have yourself a great evening. Yep. Good luck with your tour.
All right, you too.
See ya.
See you. Thank you.
Corey, why don't you send us out?
Crack a Sweetwater Brewing Company beer, mixed drink. You deserve it.
Intro music recorded by Tyler Richton and the High Bank Boys. Commentary added by Elena Montemagni. And credit to bensound.com for music.